Hello and welcome back to Relatively Football. It has been too long, listener, a whole week away, but we hope that you caught up with our wonderful sibling interviews with Catherine and Sophie Schurschel. As always, with Relatively Football, talking women's football, talking with my sibling, this is Theo calling in from New Orleans, and I'm here with my sister from London, Flo. How are you doing, mate?
I'm all right, mate. Yeah, I'm not feeling too bad. Tired and recovering after a big Domino's sesh last night.
Tuesdays will do that to you. Just keeping warm?
Am I what?
Keeping warm.
Keeping warm, yeah. Keeping warm in this cold weather.
Good. Winter's coming. Winter's here. You were paying attention to, let's get straight to it, the Euro 2022 qualifiers. Bit of chaos yesterday. Lots of tears, lots of late night goals. What's your big takeaway from the poor Scots going out thanks to a last minute winner from Amanda Rantanen for Finland in a 1-0 defeat?
Yeah, loads of tears. Loads of tears.
Mostly from you and Finnish players.
Mainly from the home nations, to be honest, because it wasn't, oh, okay. It wasn't a great night for everyone apart from Northern Ireland. A historic night for Northern Ireland, and well done to them because they pulled off a big win, a 5-1 win against the Faroe Islands, who, to be fair, have struggled. I don't think they've scored a goal in qualifying, and you know it was going to be tough for Northern Ireland to lose, but they are on the verge of qualifying for their first ever major tournament, and that's big. And there were two siblings that scored, which is the dream, really.
That's what
for
we
us.
Live for. You're right. That's the opener. That's the show opener.
That's what we want to see.
The McGuinnesses.
Yeah. And also.
TBD, we'll be talking to their agent soon.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. If anyone has a hookup, please let us know. And also, one of our faves, Rachel Furness, was on the score sheet. So she's been.
Big on Twitter as well. You noticed that. Felt like she was just tweeting, bigging up Northern Ireland on Twitter more than normal.
Yeah, I think all of them were.
Like from the dressing room. It really felt like psyched. Right before kickoff, she was shooting off tweets.
Yeah, I mean, it's really great for them. And they have got, I think, quite a fun team as well. And her sort of leading the charge, she is such a energetic and big character, and I think she really leads that team and motivates them as well. Ireland didn't get the result that they needed against Germany, which was always going to be a struggle, but we did see a first competitive start for Grace Maloney, which was big because she's been in and around the Irish setup for a while. She sort of spent some time out of it, some time in it. But it's mad that she's never had a competitive start for them, despite having, I think, over 100 caps for Reading. So, yeah, that was big for her. But unfortunately, Republic of Ireland lost 3-1 to Germany. But, I mean, that kind of felt inevitable. Katie McCabe got on the score sheet, which is good to see. One of my faves as well. But, yeah, I think the Scotland one was probably the biggest heartbreak because they started their qualification period quite well, and I think
and they have a great squad.
Yeah, a really strong squad.
Objectively speaking, good on paper.
Yeah, and qualified for the World Cup last summer. Narrowly missed out on getting into the next stages of that. Had a bit of a traumatic end to that campaign for the World Cup, but had hit the ground fairly well. They'd beaten Cyprus and Albania, scored loads of goals in the process, but the loss to Finland in October was what really, I think, dealt them a big confidence blow. And, yeah, there was a lot of discussions already in the post-match about what they're going to do. And I think what's even more painful is they've still got two games to play in this qualification period, even though there's no chance of them getting a playoff spot, whereas everyone else was sort of just fighting for the playoff spot. Scotland have now got to play two games that were postponed during the pandemic. I think they're playing them in February. And it's just so painful when you know, like, what's the point? So that's going to be really tough. And the words post-match were pretty scathing. I mean, Lisa Evans said that they needed to be, that there needs to be more professionalism from them, which is pretty scathing given most, if not all, the Scotland team are now full-time professionals, apart from maybe those who are playing in Scotland, although a lot of the teams in Scotland are moving towards professional anyway. But yeah, that was pretty brutal. So I think it's going to, you know, there might be a refresh there. Perhaps Shelley Kerr might move on. I don't know. But it wasn't great, to be honest, because I think they would have definitely liked to have qualified. They qualified for the last tournament. So, yeah.
Do you think Wales, who will have also been disqualified, well, they haven't qualified, disqualified sounds
that sounds like they've done something illegal.
They have also not made the tournament, finishing beneath Northern Ireland in that group. Do you think that's a worse exit than Scotland? Or do you think the way it happened with that last-minute goal, the way Scotland were pushing and then they lost the ball, goes down the other end, Ranerton shoots, the keeper gets a hand to it, bounces off her face into the back of the net. She's only just come off the bench, the Finnish player. You know, do you think that was more of a heartbreak for Scotland? Or do you think we need to kind of give some attention to Wales, who also have a decent squad, you know, a lot of WSL players there, maybe should have done better in their group?
I think the Scotland one is certainly more painful, more traumatic, just because of the circumstances, the way that happened and the build-up play that they had, pushing for a goal and then to lose the ball and for that sort of freak goal to go in off her face was just, oh, it was ridiculous. It was a bit like the way that they lost to Argentina. Just there's so much calamity with Scotland at the moment. And also they do have a better, more balanced team as well, more talented team. So I think their chances of qualifying in the first place were better than the chances that Wales had. I think Wales are always sort of the plucky underdogs here. And even though they came close to qualifying for the World Cup, they were always sort of just about missing out. I think Jane Ludlow is a great manager, so I don't think she'll be in trouble. But it is frustrating because it's like they're so close. They're so close to having what they need, but I think it's unfortunate because it was the games against Northern Ireland which sort of ended up being their undoing because of the away goals rule with the draws that they got with Northern Ireland, 2-2 draw, and then they didn't manage to beat Northern Ireland, in Belfast. So if they had won those games against Northern Ireland or not conceded those away goals to Northern Ireland in the home fixture, then things could be a little bit different. So I think that's what's so frustrating for them. Whereas Scotland, they know where they went wrong, those two games against Finland. And Finland are a good team. They've qualified for the Euros on multiple occasions. And, you know, we obviously know there's a lot of strength in Scandi football. But, you know, Scotland should be getting a playoff spot. And actually, we should say that it's still, you know, Northern Ireland and all these other home nations were just fighting for playoff spots. So there's nothing confirmed yet. But Northern Ireland are on the peak of something historic. So that's really exciting, especially as the men's team failed to qualify for Euro 2020. So that, I think, will be really exciting for Northern Irish women's football to pull in some of the fan base and maybe get people following the team who haven't necessarily followed them before.
Iceland, Belgium and Finland joined the tournament this round of international fixtures, and Russia, Northern Ireland, Italy, Czech Republic and Portugal have all snapped up playoff places. Italy and Portugal can still qualify automatically as a best runner-up. Flo, in domestic international news, you were also off to Stoke, putting on all your extra layers and seeing the wonderful England versus the even more wonderful England. How was this intramural kind of squad camp love-in fest, complete with lots of football mafia?
I pulled on my fur-lined Timberland boots, and if anyone is looking, any football reporters out there looking for something that to invest in to keep warm, what some of the best money I've ever spent buying those boots about a year and a half ago. So warm, so that saved me.
And if any furry boot companies out there are looking for, yes, a podcast to sponsor,
please sponsor me.
This could be some of the best money you've ever spent.
But no, it was good. I mean, obviously far to go, but I haven't covered England in ages, so I was really keen to go. And I saw Jesse there, which was great. JPH.
Legend.
Friend of the show. And that was great because it's really nice seeing a familiar face, because there's nothing worse when you're in the press box and you don't know anyone, you've got no one to talk to. So it was so great to chat to them and just kind of laugh about the whole funny situation that England find themselves in. which I think is a bit of a disadvantage, which is what I sort of asked Phil Neville and some of the players about afterwards, is because there wasn't a qualification process for them because they're hosts, they're missing out on competitive fixtures and they're having to play these kind of pointless internal games. I mean, the talent is so good and so high and the quality is really good that is it as good, you know, is it better actually maybe than if you were just drawn against a super easy group where you're playing the Faroe Islands and you're going to win 12-0 or you're playing Albania and you're going to win 12-0. I don't know. I mean, it was highly competitive, really tense, really physical. Beth England ended up with two cuts.
Just to check in, it was 8-1.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound that... But what I mean,
Yeah, that's true. Well, what I mean by competitive in terms of... It wasn't close, but it was competitive in terms of they were fighting like they were playing a proper fixture. It didn't feel like a friendly in that sense. Beth England got a cut on the head, courtesy of Rachel Daly, and a cut on her hand.
Sounds like Rachel Daly.
Yeah, so it was feisty, which I appreciated. You know, they hired, obviously, referees and stuff, and everyone, you know, all the players were quite gobby as well. So they took it seriously, which I think is good. But it obviously is difficult when you haven't got proper fixtures to play. So I think that was interesting. And I think Ella Toon really stood out. She scored a hat-trick, as did Beth England. Lauren James didn't play for a massive amount of the game, so we didn't really quite get to see her that much. But she came on for the last maybe 15 minutes or so. But I think the standout was, and Jessie wrote a great piece on Offside Rule about this, is the standout people were those that Phil Neville hasn't been starting. So it was Beth England, it was Ella Toon, it was this back three that the red team had of Lottie Webben-Morey, yeah, Leah Williamson, Millie Turner. It was this, you know, a team that was predominantly made up of players that Phil doesn't start, that were the much stronger team, you know, the new class, if you like. So I think it's quite interesting if Serena Wegman's been getting her hands on the videotapes to look at, you know, potentially experimenting with some of the things that they have on the away team who aren't the preference. Because that back three was fun. That was cool. And it worked quite well. Obviously, it's an internal fixture. So whether it would work so well in other instances, I don't know. But no, it was decent. It was decent.
Good time to jump in and just plug. I was going to maybe say this at the end of the show, but plug Jesse and Alex and Abdullah are doing a tactical webinar.
Yes,
tomorrow,
Thursday,
December 3rd, on Honeyball, or it's called Honeyball.
Yeah,
is the platform.
Yeah,
about 7 p.m. in London, right?
Yeah, I've signed up. You can sign up on Eventbrite, or if you just find Jesse or Alex or Abdullah's Twitter, I think I retweeted it on the Relatively account as well. Anyway, but you'll be able to find it.
We'll give it another retweet. But that's tomorrow, and it's all about Serena Wegman and tactics and England and such. So good point to kind of jump off on, like, what the post-Phil Neville era will look like.
And segue.
Why don't you segue
into USA Holland with that little...
I missed my own brilliant segue.
Yeah.
So we go from Wegman to Wegman. I saw... Well, actually, you say that, but Wegman had a family emergency and actually didn't turn up.
So from Wegman to
why
her assistant coach, I don't know that.
Her bald assistant coach, right, who I can't remember the name of. Yeah, I mean, I don't think Wegman will be too impressed when she gets a hold of the videotapes of this one. It was an amazing performance from the US. Quite frightening. This is a team that haven't played together. You know, you talk about competitively.
Yeah, they look good.
They haven't played together since the She Believes Cup. They've had one camp compared to, I think, England have now had three, albeit with no fixtures either. But the USA looked amazing in a 4-3-3. Kristen Press at the number nine, but with Heath and Lynn Williams running off her. And they were just unbelievable from start to finish. Stronger, more intelligent, feistier. They were pressing at one end and building attacks from the other. Becky Sauerbrunn as captain, which I know...
A lot of people love that.
That was probably the second biggest story of the night because, of course, Christy Mewis comes on in the 61st minute for her first appearance for the USWMT since 2014. And then she gets a goal 10 minutes later, and a really great goal set up by Lynn Williams, who had a great calm mind to just play it through one touch. And then she just bursts beyond the Dutch back line and slots it away, which you've really seen her do. Her and Shea Groom have done that really well for the Dash. They're kind of, they both play, they're not like attacking midfielders, but they, one of them will just burst from the kind of proper central midfield number eight role, and they'll kind of come out of nowhere. And you saw that with the 4-3-3 that Vlatko Adanovski had. You know, you have Rose Lavelle in that retreated three alongside Mewis, and Mewis and Lavelle are so good at being a slightly further back midfielder who can kind of join attacks really late. And when Christy Mewis came on, she was able to kind of just pick up exactly where Rose Lavelle had left off, and looked so great playing alongside her sister. We obviously love to see that. Was a real kind of, that was a starring moment, which really put Twitter alight.
Yes.
It was good to see. I felt like our sibling Twitter became the US national sibling Twitter when you saw all the Mewis sisters. And obviously, you know, Chris Mewis has had ACL injuries. She's been played for four different NWSL clubs. She's kind of bombed around a lot after coming out of university and playing for the US when she was like 18, 19. She was like meant to be the hottest talent. And obviously her sister has come.
Yeah, I had no idea that Sam was younger, you know, until I went on their wikis. Yeah. Not by much. They're very close in age.
A couple of years.
It's like 18 months. 27. Something like that.
27 and 29. Yeah. Christy's 29.
But yeah.
So that was a big story. And I think, yeah, like I said, I think it'll be interesting to see if England, should we play a Holland or a Germany or a Sweden or a Norway, whether or not we would come back the same way the US did. I think all US fans and Adanovski and, yeah, the whole establishment will be really pleased with the way they came back after, nearly 9 months out without competitive football. That's really impressive. And I think it's a good sign of one of the talking points coming out of that was, you know, Rose Lavelle being at the top of her game with an extraordinary finish. When are we going to see that in the WSL? You know, I think the winners from this game were the US women's fans and siblings all around the world, and the losers from this game were Gareth Taylor and the Rose Lavelle isn't good enough for the WSL squad. They definitely are going to have a lot of questions after that. Any other international stuff, Flo?
I just wanted to pick up on the piece in The Athletic about the sort of rejigged She Believes Cup that England or the FA.
Oh yeah, this is a great story.
Yeah, the FA is trying to recreate. Katie Wyatt got the exclusive, who's just moved from Telegraph to The Athletic, replacing the role that Kieran had, who's now moved on to the FA. So there's a little bit of a merry-go-round there, but a great writer, really great young writer who was also there on Friday. But yeah, the FA is trying to put together a plan to do a She Believes Cup next year. I guess the understanding is it would only be European teams because of the pandemic, or because there's so many US teams, US players in Europe, they could do what the US did for that camp and do a bit of a mix and match and hopefully get the US involved. I don't know what your take was on it.
Yeah, I read it like the former, like they were going to basically host a rival competition to the She Believes. Because right now the US Soccer Federation have not cancelled the She Believes Cup. England have just chosen to not turn up.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I haven't heard anything from Japan. So I think maybe watch this space. But the way I kind of interpreted it was it's going to be more local to Europe. And I think maybe you would see the US, Canada, Mexico, Costa Rica have a She Believes. That would be my guess. But I'll let you know if I hear any news from this side of the Atlantic. But I kind of feel like the US will do their own thing. But yeah, I guess if they want to keep it in March, that's not really going to work with the WSL players. So you'd still lose Sam Mewis and Lavelle and Press, etc.
Yeah,
something to keep an eye on. I had forgotten about that announcement. That's definitely a big one. Should we take a little break after all that international, and then we'll come back with what's going on this weekend in England, as well as chatting a little bit about the Champions League that returns midweek next week. All right, see you in a bit. And welcome back. All right, So the UEFA Women's Champions League is returning midweek next week. It's going to be on Wednesday and Thursday. It's the round of 32. The draw was last week, but all the matches have been confirmed and their schedule. So do check that out. I'll just maybe jump in a couple of ones that I like the look of. Juve v Lyon, Flo, I thought was one that looked quite good next week to keep an eye on. And Göteborg versus City, the Swedish champions, who had Emily Sonnet in the season window, I think will be another interesting one to check out, Flo. Do you know where these games are going to be shown? They're going to be on BT Sport, I imagine, Flo?
Okay, so Champions League is complicated for the moment, but from next year, things will get easier. So basically, because of the situation with it being sort of more of a cup competition rather than the group stage that we've seen in traditional men's Champions League, what happens is all the TV rights up until the semi-finals are sold like by the individual club. So the club handle it, in which case it's just quite difficult to watch games. So Chelsea probably likely to show theirs.
City Plus as well.
Yeah, City quite likely to show theirs, or BT Sport will decide to pick up the games. But it's basically done on a match-by-match basis. They're individually packaged. So the club or the broadcaster will sort that out with UEFA, basically. But from next year, there's going to be group stages and there's going to be centralised TV rights. So someone like BT Sport will come in and get the group stages and, you know, get the whole package. Whereas up to this point, it's been really hard, a bit like the Conti Cup, I guess, to watch any games until you get to semi-finals, because it's just on a sort of game-by-game basis. And then sometimes if there's a really tasty quarter-final fixture, someone might pick it up. And obviously with the way that the Champions League ended up doing this year in Spain to finish it in the bubble, people did end up picking it up and showing it. BT kind of stepped in to do that, which was great. And BBC Alba showed Glasgow's game. So you just got to hope for the best, I guess. But I'm confident that Chelsea and City will show theirs.
So yeah, the fixtures are back-to-back weeks. Next week, the 9th and 10th, and then the 15th, 16th and 17th the week after. Yeah, definitely look out for the City game. I think should be a really good one. American listeners, CBS All Access did show the quarterfinals, semifinals and final last year. They also have the men's Champions League, so keep an eye on that. They might be showing some of these games.
I think two interesting fixtures that Dutch teams have drawn, PSV Barcelona and Ajax Bayern. I think Barcelona and Bayern will both win those games, but it'd be just interesting to see how those two big Dutch teams do against two of the really growing sides in Europe. Barcelona especially are getting closer and closer and closer to trying to compete with the Lyons and the other big guns. But yeah, some interesting ties. There could be some upsets.
Keep an eye and we will keep you informed on those upsets. One more scheduling update to give you is Birmingham and Leicester in the Conti Cup has been confirmed for this coming Wednesday, the 9th of December. Not 100% sure if it's going to be on FA Player yet or if Birmingham or Leicester will be streaming it, but keep an eye. That is a decider for who goes through to the next round of the Conti Cup. All right, we will move on now to the FAWSL preview for this weekend. Big weekend, Flo. Great to have it back. It's been too long, 3 weeks now? And let's kick off with the Saturday game, Flo. This game is going to be on FA Player in the UK. And I think it's a early kickoff, same time, the 12:30 p.m. lunchtime, 7:30 East Coast at 10:30 United States. It's Aston Villa hosting, top of the table, Manchester United. Do you think the extra time off is going to help Gemma Davies at all and maybe blow up some of the Casey Stoney momentum? Or do you think this is going to be business as usual for a Man United side playing really well?
Business as usual for me. Business as usual.
All business.
Yeah, I mean, the best case scenario would be that Stoney rests a few players who've been on international duty, but most of the England camp didn't really get much of a run out, especially Lauren James. Ella Toon did
just a casual hat trick from Ella Toon.
Yeah, and Millie Turner played as well. So all in all, I don't think she'll be that bothered. Press and Heath, did they come back unscathed?
Unscathed. I mean, I think Press was fantastic. Got the assist for Rose Lavelle's goal. And I think Press has been playing at the number nine role for under Stoney. But I think this is going to be an interesting game, especially against weaker opposition, to see how Press, who I think hasn't been as good as Heath so far in the league, how she kind of comes in. And I think Stoney, who was, I'm sure, watching the USA-Netherlands game, will maybe look to see and look at what Andonovski did and use Press in that way. Because I think Press was like a number nine, but she almost wasn't quite a false nine, but she would come deeper rather than like leading the line and trying to run into the box. Obviously, Press, as we saw in the She Believes, is an amazing finisher from about 18, 20, 25 yards. So I think it'll be interesting to see if she can play this withdrawn number nine role for Man United, where she can kind of drop back and let runners go at her. I mean, I think it's a shame Russo's obviously injured, because she does that more driving, you know. Press is a more intelligent player. She's more graceful. She's not necessarily athletic and quick in the same way. And I think, if she can drop back and let Heath run in, Toon run in, Kirsty Hansen, some of these kind of, even Lauren James, I think, could link up really well with Press. So I think that's what I'm excited to see, maybe a little bit more from Press.
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity for her to just show off a little bit. And when others have been making headlines, just kind of give the fans a bit of that US flair and spice that we saw in the game last week.
I'd like to see Anita Asante move back into midfield as well. I think Villa have been better when she's in central defensive midfield rather in the back four at centre back, but I don't know if Gemma Davies is going to trust anyone else with that role. But maybe a nice start for Diana Silva would be nice too. She's been on the bench recently, but I think be nice to see her come back and start this one.
Yeah, I think, did she score in any of Portugal's games? I think she had a good chance in one of her games that she missed, but I don't know if she got a goal. But it'd be good to see her do what, you know, we want to see.
What we want to see. Any other hopes for Villa? Do you think they could pull this one out at all?
No.
If there was any weak spot, no. We're just going to close that book. No. Sorry, Villa fans. Trying to keep the book open, but we're shutting it down. Okay, on to Sunday's fixtures, Sunday the 6th of December. This is also the early kickoff. It's the 12:30 noon UK, 7:30 East Coast, and 10:30 out in Australia in the nighttime. This one's going to be on the red button, I think, as well as FA Player. And for American listeners, it's on NBCSN. It will not be on the FA Player. Likewise, I think if you're in Germany, etc., on the DAZN broadcast. So Chelsea, second in the table, go to managerless West Ham. This one's at King's Meadow, and there will be 700 fans as well, Flo. Excited to have fans back?
Yeah, I think it'd be wicked. Been following Jesse's updates on this, and their last tweet I saw was Chelsea put out a statement saying they believe with the local restrictions and all that kind of stuff, they think they can have up to 700, and I think there's going to be a ballot for that. So that'd be amazing if they get fans back in, especially for London Derby and a game that in recent years Chelsea have scored a lot of goals in, and also playing a club without a manager. So team that's ripe for the picking, really. And yeah, I think it should be good if we can get fans back. One of the things I forgot to mention when we talked about England was I actually asked Beth England about her high bun, because I'm not sure if many people have noticed, but a few of us.
Just the big question.
The big, you know, I've got to say the big questions, really important questions that everyone wants to know. I asked Beth England about her bun because Jesse and others had spotted that Beth's infamous or famous high bun that she'd rocked throughout last season had slid down a bit, and she was now rocking a low bun with a middle parting. And yeah, she changed things up a bit, and I asked her why, and she said it's because the high bun was getting in the way of the ball when she tried to head it, so she went for a low bun. The issue being that she ended up getting cut right on the low bun parting, and if she'd had the high bun there, she wouldn't have got cut. So, you know, football, doing your hair is a dangerous thing in football because you never know when it might protect you. But I just thought it was an interesting insight on how changing your hair has also changed her game.
You talked about the competitive nature, the fierceness of the England-England match. Do you think Rachel Daly, now she's going to be in a West Ham shirt facing off against Beth England, maybe in a, if she gets a start in a Chelsea shirt, do you think we'll see some fierceness on this one, especially, you know, if West Ham concede a few goals? I feel like they're one of the more emotional sides, West Ham, and so I could kind of see this game getting a little bit out of hand.
You just want to turn it into a revenge game. Anything to stick the revenge game narrative on it. So, I mean, yeah, maybe Beth England revenge game for the cuts that she got on Friday. But I know what you mean. West Ham are in a really bad place. So their confidence is completely knocked. They don't have a manager. It's just a really crap time to be part of that team. So hopefully someone like Gillie Flacherty sort of brings everyone together and manages to motivate them, and she becomes the leader that they really need, because she's, I feel like she's been a bit absent and a bit down this season, and not really surprising, is it, given the situation? But yeah, it could be really, really bad for West Ham.
Yeah, and if you do go to Kings Meadow, Chelsea fans or football fans, let us know.
Yeah, please. I'd love to know what it's going to be like.
Please tell us about the logistics, yes. How you got in, how safe it felt.
Oh, that's the best thing.
And you know, you might even see Fran Kirby, who is back in fitness and training, so maybe it'd be nice to see her come back off the bench in front of fans, see how the Kerr, Harder, England front three figure that things out. I think this will be a walk in the park for Chelsea, who should get their goals tally back into a healthy state of mind, and do obviously keep an eye on Beth England's high bun. Arsenal are up next on Sunday. This is where we get the nice slew of 2 p.m. kickoffs. They second place Arsenal are hosting Birmingham. It's a 9 a.m. on the U.S. East Coast and midnight out in Australia. This is FA Player Everywhere. Arsenal flow. Obviously, last time we were watching the WSL, they had a decent result against Chelsea, albeit they had the lead and it was wiped away by that Lottie Wobbenmoy own goal. This is a kind of tricky game. You know, the Americans out there will know, I would call this a trap game. It's the kind of game which you should win, but they're a sticky opponent that are not as, it's kind of easier said than done. And you can't go in and you know, we talked a little bit about Villa, we talked a little bit about West Ham. We were kind of like, oh yeah, that's going to be a win. But Birmingham, you know, this is the sixth place team in the league that have really shown up. Carlo Ward has come out this week and said, you know, I'm not trying to go anywhere. I'm here, I'm a Birmingham manager. I want to believe in this team. Do you think we could see something different here, you know, an upset or at least they're making it really difficult for Arsenal?
Yeah, potentially. I do think they shouldn't get too cocky with the great result that they got against Chelsea, because I think a lot of people had written them off of getting anything in that game, and they were seconds away from winning it, and they played so well. They were so solid and organised and really extinguished any threat from Chelsea, who are one of the most potent and exciting attacking sides in the league. Birmingham are really hard to break down, so I think Arsenal will struggle with that a little bit, because they do get quite frustrated, especially Miedema, quite quickly when they can't create opportunities. And given what happened in that game against Bristol City, where they conceded really quickly, kind of against the run of play, and what Birmingham have managed to do in games against Man United, albeit they lost that game, but the way in which they can counter-attack quite quickly and punish teams could be really difficult for Arsenal. So I think it'll be a really interesting game, and I think it's probably the best matchup of the weekend, because I think it'll be interesting to see how both teams cope with each other.
Arsenal are the team in the league outperforming their XG more than anyone else. Birmingham are maybe surprisingly the second in the league for outperforming XG with plus 4.3, partly due to Claudia Walker's exceptionally efficient finishing, 5 goals now in the last 6 games. She converts about 55% of all the shots she takes. Do you think this, you were talking about, you know, Birmingham can punish you. Do you think they'll regress? Do you think they can keep being this efficient? Like, do you think they're getting lucky, or are we underestimating, you know, is the XG, are the mathematicians wrong? You know, they're saying Birmingham are overperforming, but maybe they just don't know how good Claudia Walker is.
I mean, wouldn't say the mathematicians are wrong. Also, I don't know if I really trust data actually in women's football anyway. It's so hard to find accurate data, and I don't really get XG as a stat anyway. I'm not really bothered about XG and that kind of thing. It's, I don't know.
Game's gone.
I'm sure that the crew will dive into Serena Wiegmann's XG for the team she's managed tomorrow night. But yeah, I think they're just one of those sides that maximise the output that they have, make the most of the opportunities. And Cordia Walker's in great form, and she's potent. I also think Arsenal will be boosted, though, by the return of a lot of important players. Lisa Evans played for Scotland.
Jill Roard scored a free kick for Netherlands.
Yeah, I think Leah Valti was playing as well.
Oh, she's going to be out, though. She got a concussion.
Oh, she did? Okay, forget that.
She did, and I think... Yeah, I think they've already said that she's going to miss the
game.
Okay,
and also, despite the result, Jem Beattie played really well for Scotland. Lottie Vobermoy's in fantastic form. So I think there's a lot...
Yeah, her and Leah Williamson, good partnership.
Yeah, there's a lot for Joe Montemurro to be positive about. Jordan Nobbs got a couple of minutes for England on Friday. So the squad is slowly recovering, and I think the international break, although it came at a bad time in terms of their form and their performances, it came at a good time because it gave some of their players an opportunity to rest and recover. Someone like Caitlin Ford, who's been putting in a lot of minutes. Steph Catley, who's been in and out of the treatment room.
Can we get a goal prediction on this one? We don't always do predictions, but like you said, I kind of feel like this is the game of the weekend. Definitely one I'll be watching. Well, how do you think it will finish?
3-1 Arsenal. I think it'll be similar to the Bristol result.
Okay. I'm going to say 1-0 Arsenal.
Okay.
I'm going to really let Birmingham maybe try and linger in that one quite long. Well, I do, maybe 2. I do wonder if Birmingham will just not win in. They do have that battle, but I'll stick with 1-0. All right, moving on to Sunday, also at 2 p.m., 9 a.m. on the East Coast, midnight in Australia. FA player, wherever you are. 7th place Reading are playing bottom of the table Bristol City, who before the break were doing all right. You know, we saw them turn around their favours. Tanya Oxtoby is back in training and back managing the team after the COVID outbreak. Their academy is back after, you know, the COVID regulations in elite sport have changed in the UK, or at least for the women's football. This game was 3-3 last year, Flo. Bit of a goal fest. But we've seen Bristol playing with a back five this year, and Reading look quite obstinate and physical. Do you think we're going to see goals in this one? Or I kind of think this one might be quite cagey.
I feel like my head is saying Reading to win, but my heart is saying the inconsistency and unpredictability of Reading is going to shine through here and Bristol might surprise us. Which is weird because Bristol are so bad and have had such a tough time this season and just can't really compete, to be honest, in terms of the quality that they have. They're with Villa, really, in that sense. So really you should think, oh yeah, this will be an easy one for Reading. But Reading just have a knack of sort of being the masters of their own downfall a little bit. Some days they can be so organised and be so on it and get a point against City and hold City out for 75 minutes and, you know, concede 25 shots and only let in one goal. And then other days, they're just all over the place and really disorganised. So I'm just kind of getting a sense that we might see that Reading on the weekend, and maybe there'll be a bit of a hangover with the Wales players, who make up a really large proportion of that Reading side. Maybe they'll still be feeling the pain of missing out on qualification for yet another major tournament. So I'm just, I don't know, my spidey senses are tingling a little bit.
Yeah, I like that. I like where your spidey senses are at. This is, the things which interest me about this game is the youngest team in the WSL versus the oldest team. Bristol's average age is 23, whereas Reading is 28 and a half. And this is also a team that like to possess the ball versus the, you know, a team that really won't possess the ball at all. Reading have been as low as sort of 30% in possession. They are bottom of the league in terms of possession, in terms of passes. They play with this five at the back, but they do have Chloe Legazo and Ebony Salmon, who has only played cumulatively about 3 sets of 90 minutes, but has come on, and a bit like Claudia Walker, has been really good at finishing chances, especially, you know, when you don't see, you see a lot of the game without them, scored a really fantastic goal against Lewis in the cup. And I just feel like, yeah, I mean, it's a shame we've had this long break, because maybe if this game was 3 weeks ago, we'd be even more high on Bristol. But I just feel like Bristol are coming in with their tails up, and they'll have a really good game plan to kind of say, hey, Reading, you can have the ball, but we're going to stuff you and drop really, really deep. And I just wonder if Fishlock or Farrell Williams can't score from 25 yards, are Reading going to score? I think Bristol are going to make it really difficult for them. And I trust Ebony Salmon to maybe win one in transition, or you know, put pressure on Grace Maloney or something and score kind of a wacky goal. And I could see an upset here. I think it's going to be a really, really interesting game, quite cagey for a lot of it. But I think we might see something kind of weird happen. But I do think, on paper, Reading have the better players, especially players like Harding and Williams, who are great on the ball and do have a lot of quality. I think it'll be interesting to see how Daniel Carter gets on, who I think last time we saw them was really physical and really up for it. But I think she's going to have a lot to deal with that five-person back five for Bristol. The last game in the 2 p.m. section. And just to say, Reading are open for fans that want to go to the Majeski. They're selling tickets. Again, if you do make it out, let us know. If you're a Reading fan or just a football fan, you got to go on their site. And I think you can only buy one ticket per account, maybe. But yeah, do your research and check that out. And yes, moving on to the last of the 2 p.m. kickoffs. Spurs are at home to Brighton. Spurs, who have also changed their manager since we last spoke, or kind of when we last spoke. Rianne Skinner is now in charge there, hosting Hope Powell's Brighton. And this game is also open to the fans, but you have to have either previously had a season ticket, or you have to buy a season ticket now, and you'll be allowed in.
Those are my favourite kind of deals. Only for the hardcore, yes. And maximise any opportunity to get some money. I think, screw it. If you really want to come, show your commitment to this club, come in for the long term. I'm all for it.
I think the season tickets aren't that expensive.
No, they'll be so cheap.
They're about 40
Yeah, they'll be super cheap. And actually, Jesse was telling me, which I didn't realise, is that Chelsea didn't even sell season tickets for this season because they obviously realised they weren't going to know what the situation was, and because they're one of the more popular sides and get, you know, about 4,000 in every week, they didn't really sell any. So now it's quite open to anyone to apply for the ballot. But I think enticing people by saying buy a season ticket and try and make them a bit of a long-term fan, potentially, if they aren't already, I think is a great opportunity.
Yeah, I think with Alex Morgan now being back in the fold, she played against Netherlands, looked quite good. This will be a big chance for Spurs, not necessarily to like just commercially cash in and have fans come and see Alex Morgan and see kind of Spurs 2.0 with Rianne Skinner in charge. But I think this is a big moment for Spurs to try and put away a side who we both really like. We Brighton are kind of, they've made themselves a WSL side. They look professional. They've got a great manager. They're hard to beat. I think this is going to be a really big test for Rianne Skinner and Spurs, hopefully in front of some fans who are, you know, there to kind of cheer on Spurs and see if they can do it. We've talked a lot about Siri Vorm, who's fantastic from set pieces. I think that's going to be an area where Hope Power will be, you know, I've often said that, you know, Siri Vorm set pieces are unstoppable, but I actually really trust Hope Powell to figure out a way to block that. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how Spurs maybe try and create more from open play, either with Alex Morgan starting or off the bench.
I like it. And I think it was interesting because both Jesse and I were really surprised to see Rianne Skinner coaching the white team on Friday, because she'd been to Spurs, joined them, done the photo shoot, trained with a couple of players, and then gone back to England, which was really strange to then finish off her duties with them. So we were both surprised about that. But, you know, obviously white team got thrashed, but it'll be interesting to see how much time she'll really get with them to properly, you know, get to grips with them, change things, try and instill a bit more positivity around the place and a bit more belief. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how much impact she can have that quickly.
Do you think she'd make any wholesale changes? We've seen kind of a very similar Spurs side every week, bar a bit of experimentation in the Conti Cup.
I think she wouldn't have necessarily had enough time to make massive changes. I think she'll probably maybe make one or two, but not do much. I think she'll be looking for a bit of consistency. And also, you don't want to rock the boat too much. You don't want to come in and suddenly drop a load of people and upset that balance.
There you go. Will Spurs get their first win of the season? And the final game of the weekend, 30 minutes later, is the 2:30 p.m. kickoff in the UK, 9:30 East Coast, just after midnight in Australia. This game's on BT Sport, FA Player in certain areas, and NBC SN again in the US. Everton in fourth place against City in fifth place. This is a real heat check. A kind of, you know, if you come at the king, you better not miss for Everton. They've had a great start to the season. They're ahead of City in the table, but they're, you know, playing one of the best teams on paper in the league, who've looked slightly better with those two draws against United and a nice thrashing of Bristol recently. How you feel about this one, Flo?
The only thing I think about this is Rose Lavelle. After her performance against Holland, I feel like all people are now talking about is she going to play, and is she going to play in the right position? That's it for me. It's all I can think about when I look at this game, because I think people are frustrated with the way she's been treated. Sounds really harsh, but frustrated with the way she's been used, I guess, in this system, and that her time at City is not really going to work out because they haven't found a way to use her, and we're not seeing her talent. So I just really hope that we do get to see her in the right way on the weekend, and she does an amazing performance and then does a sort of finger to the mouth shush in celebration, or like fingers in the ears celebration when she scores an absolute belter, because her goal against Holland was unreal. So I just want to see that in a City shirt. And like, she scored goals in the Conti Cup, so it's just a shame because the WSL is a lot more visible, and the FA Cup final was really visible. And
yeah, I was going to say, it's a replay of the FA Cup final, which was kind of the beginning of the what's going on with Rose Lavelle conversation, where she didn't have a good game that day and really struggled to break through that five-person Everton midfield. How do you think these teams are going to line up kind of comparatively? We talked a little bit about Caroline Weir maybe being made way for a Lavelle in a better position, but maybe Lavelle will start on the bench in this one. Obviously, there's no Gauvin, who played beyond her body, was kind of ability in that cup final, but scored a great goal. How do these two managers balance their squads in regards to fitness, in regards to impact?
I think City are the luckier side in that sense, because they have got quite a lot to work with. I think Everton will struggle a little bit because they don't have Gauvin and they don't have that threat from set pieces so much anymore, which has been a really big part of some of the goals that they've scored. Those deliveries from Sorensen and Christensen have provided a massive outlet for them, but they're still dangerous on the break with Hayley Rasso and her pace and
top quality
and her aggressiveness. So I think they're still a threat. I just think at this present moment, City have more tools to beat them with. I don't think Ellen White should start for City. I'm starting to think she's gone stale a little bit, and part of it is the way that City play, I don't think really suits her style. So it's not necessarily her fault. You know, she is a sort of target player. She really just wants the ball like presented straight to her. She doesn't really run onto things that much. It needs to be kind of a really good delivery that she can get onto, whether it's with her head or with her foot or, you know, with her chest or whatever. She needs that. She needs really good quality, inch perfect delivery. And not a lot of work to do outside of that, which maybe sounds pretty harsh, but I think that's just kind of what she's become. And you see that with England now too. And she was fantastic at the World Cup last summer, don't get me wrong. You know, third best scorer, wasn't she, of that tournament? But she has a certain style that she likes to play to, and it worked at the World Cup, but it's not really working with City. And I think dropping her out of that team might bring them a bit more success.
Well, and the Champions League is midweek as well for City, and then midweek again the week after that. So how Gareth Taylor gets the balance of White, Stanway, Laura Coombs is kind of very in form as well. So I think how we see Gareth Taylor prioritise this game, I think is going to be really interesting. And I think for me, Willie Kirk, especially talked about Heli Raso, I think has to come out quick and see what United did well in the game 2 weeks ago, where Jackie Cronin was able to kind of disrupt their rhythm and press high. And I wonder if Raso and Christensen can kind of get an early dig on Steph Houghton, let's say, or, you know, Lucy Bronze got in the United game. If you can turn that ball over and get a cheeky goal, I just wonder if Everton can hold on. I really worry, though, with the amazing bench that City have. I think if City get the first goal, I don't see quite the comeback that Everton were able to put together in the cup final and hold out. I think they're going to be, yeah, a bit thinner on the ground on this one. But a great way to end the WSL Sunday. There's also the FA Women's Championship returning on Sunday. Flo, any games jump out to you? I know Lewis are having fans if you're in the Sussex area. £12 tickets, I think. You can just turn up on the door, as well as the Lewis Charlton game is also being streamed online if you fancy checking that one out.
I think the game that stands out to me, there's quite a few one-sided fixtures in this, but I think where I see being exciting is that Liverpool-Palace game. Liverpool have dropped a lot of points this season against weaker opposition, and I have a feeling that Palace might be able to pull something off. It might just be getting a point, but I just feel like that's the game, the one to watch for me, and could be a bit of an upset. The rest of the games, I think, are a little bit one-sided. Leicester will probably smash London Bees. Coventry United having a really tough time. Durham, top of the table in fantastic form. Lewis Charlton could be quite close. Lewis love a draw. I think not some of the big title exciting clashes that we've come to know and love, but off the pitch, an exciting and great bit of work from Durham, who have got a new charity partner. They've decided to partner with an organisation called Amber's Law, and they're campaigning to reduce the age at which women in the UK are sort of recommended and I don't think it's required, but recommended and suggested to get a smear test, and they really want to change that law, because they believe that lots of young women are missing out on, you know, potentially a life-saving test. So I think it's great what they've done, and Durham are a really great club, and I think it'd be great to see them in the WSL next year. It's actually really interesting, a couple of weeks ago on Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport, which some of you may know I've now been working on, we had Courtney Sweetman-Kirk on, ex-Liverpool, current Sheffield United player, and she was talking about how Durham have really stepped it up this year, and in terms of the hours as well that players are training and the contact time they're getting, they've really kind of pushed up the investment, and that's definitely one of the reasons, or if not the biggest reason, why they're showing such big growth. And it just shows that when you give the players more time to train and provide them with bigger budgets, it pays off. So it was interesting to hear from her, because I think for those of us that don't really keep our head or our ear to the ground on the Championship that much, and you don't necessarily know the teams that well, you wouldn't know why Durham are doing so well this season. They've always been knocking on the door, but it's really interesting to hear from her about how well they've been doing, and Liverpool and Sheffield United's chances as well.
Yeah, Beth Heppel and Durham are storming the league and coming for us in the FA. I say us like I am part of the WSL. Coming for the top division people. Well, yeah, that's your weekend preview. Lots to look forward to, and we'll be back on probably publishing on Monday, Flo. Sunday night, Monday, we'll see.
Something like that.
Summary of the weekend fixtures. Let us know what your favourites were. If you were at the games, let us know what it was like. And follow us on Twitter at RelativelyFoot, Instagram at RelativelyFootball. Email us, relativelyfootball@gmail.com. It's great to be back. I hope you enjoyed your break. Flo, have a good rest of your evening. And it's bye-bye from us. See ya.